Welcome to the Money and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Nelson. My mission to empower millennial couples to make money moves that won't just improve your financial health, but strengthen your marriage as well. In this podcast, I share stories, tips, and tricks, both from my experience as a certified financial planner and from my own marriage, to help you and your spouse kick financial anxiety to the curb and use your money to create the lives you love together. Let's get started. All right, well, I got bad news for you. If you were hoping that my Christmas Carol Charles Dickens references were over after last week's episode, you will be disappointed here today, I'm sorry to say. But we'll keep the references brief before we move on to the theme of this week's episode. I'm actually going back in my personal archives and pulling something. Like, I put this idea together and I sent it out to my email newsletter back in December of 2016, which was my second month in business. Like 7 years ago at this point, I put this idea together. And I actually haven't talked about it publicly since, I don't think, which is interesting. And frankly, a lot of restraint on my part, I think, given how much I like talking about like Christmas-themed stuff. But, you know, last week's episode, we talked a little bit about what we can learn from Ebenezer Scrooge's journey in A Christmas Carol in terms of making financial change. I actually want to talk about like one line in the book, like Charles Dickens' book, A Christmas Carol, from the 1840s, that I think illustrates an important financial concept today that gives a lot of people some concern, I find. And so I'm going to, you know, I got in the initial email I wrote, I had like a 2-paragraph excerpt from A Christmas Carol. I'm going to summarize what this line is talking about here, because there's some technical economic language in it that I want to keep it a little bit more interesting for you while listening to this. But basically, right, in the process of the story, Scrooge is concerned because he thinks he overslept, right? And as he's visited by all these spirits, and he wakes up and he sees that the sun hasn't come up yet, which is good, because he had a financial obligation that he needed to meet that morning. And he was concerned that if he didn't meet that financial obligation, then it would become, quote, would have become a mere United States security if he had overslept, right? Like if he had missed this obligation, it would have become as little and lonely as a United States security. It would become worthless, in other words, right? There, in 1843, Charles Dickens is writing about U.S., the United States securities, which are investments or debts, or depending on, I think he's talking about a bond here, like something that's promised by the U.S. government, as being worthless in 1843. Now, in today's world, the United States bonds, right, obligations of the Treasury Department, granted, there's a lot of them, the national debt's big, right, we can get into that conversation another day, but in our lifetimes, the United States bonds are the gold standard of bonds, right? Money that is, payable by the U.S. government is not entirely riskless, of course, but pretty darn close to risk-free. If you own a government bond that pays 5% interest, odds are very, very good you're going to get that 5% interest, right? It is not something, a U.S. bond is not something that is worthless today. It is not something that is speculative. And there were some things going on in the U.S. economy at that point in time, right? This was right after some of the challenges, if you remember from your American history classes, with the National Bank. And like there were some things unique to that time period where he wrote this that might suggest that United States investments are worthless. But that's not true today, certainly, right? And in fact, today it's the opposite problem I find when I'm talking to investors who live in America. I'm often convincing them maybe they should be investing some of their money elsewhere, right? Like maybe we should be investing a portion of your money in international investments or emerging market investments. And that's actually the lesson here, right? Back in 1840, or 1843, I think was when the book was initially written, Charles Dickens is minimizing the value of investing in American securities and in American investments and American bonds. And history showed that he was wrong to make that assessment, at least in the long term, right? Maybe in the short term, but over the past 60, 70 years since this was written, United States investments have done very, very well for themselves in the aggregate, right? The United States government's bonds and debts have been some of the most stable in the world over that time period, right? Investment in American companies, certainly, in the aggregate again, right, has been one of the better performing investments out there. And so where I'm going with this is when I talk to people about making investment decisions today, right, we tend to just want to focus on investing in American mutual funds and or stocks or bonds or whatever it might be. And I'm often trying to talk people into investing internationally. Just like, I mean, one thing I've maybe hinted at but haven't actually said out loud is, right, this book, A Christmas Carol, was not written by an American. This was written by somebody in Great Britain at the time. So they're talking, this author is talking about investing in an emerging market economy at the time in a way and minimizing it, right, as something that is worthless or risky, right, and it could go to zero. And if people had treated this as investment advice back in the day, or even over the next 100+ years, that might have been a bad thing. That might have been like they might have lost out by not having some exposure to a mere United States investment, because American investments have done well since that point in time. And the same is true today, right? Yes, American investments have done well over the past, I mean, fill in the blank really in terms of the years, right? The US stock market has tended to outpace international stock markets in the past, but that does not mean it will continue to be the case in the future. It might be, but it might not be, right? Which is why I recommend to my clients to invest in mutual funds that are invested all across the world, right? Certainly a good portion, right? I mean, even a majority of your stock investments might be in American stock funds, right? A majority of your bond investments might be in American bond funds, whether it's corporate bonds or government bonds. But it's not a bad idea to have exposure elsewhere, because we don't know if the economies in China or India or Kenya or wherever, right, might outpace our growth going forward. They might. They might not, but they might, right? And so if I think that the lesson that I like to take from this kind of example, right, when we look back at this moment in time, is that investing internationally is a good idea, right? It is part of being diversified, right? And looking at historical returns in the US stock market, it only gets part of that picture, right? Because we don't know what's going to happen with US stocks, US bonds in the future relative to their international counterparts. Now, that doesn't mean we should be moving everything international, right? Definitely, I wouldn't do that either. But I've met a lot of people over the years who hesitate to invest internationally at all, right? Whether it's from just looking at the returns in the past and thinking that international investments might not do as well going forward, whether it's more of a nationalistic, like made in America type attitude. We buy American products, we invest in American stocks. Like there's different reasons people might be hesitant to invest internationally. But I mean, part of the way that I recommend my clients to invest is investing, frankly, everywhere, right? Having some investment exposure everywhere. Again, right, none of the I can't give specific investment recommendations in this context without knowing your personal situation, right? You can take this or leave this. I'm happy to talk with you one-on-one if you want to talk about this a little bit in a little bit more detail. But I chuckle every time that I read this piece from The Christmas Carol back in the 1840s, right? Minimizing the risk of investing internationally in American securities, right? Or implying that they're worthless, right? That may have been true at his time in the past. It does not mean that it will be true going forward. And the same is true here today, both in terms of investing in American stocks, stock funds, and bond funds, and more to the point, in international funds. Hope this gets you thinking. Let me know what you think. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Money and Marriage Podcast. If you want to learn more, you can access my favorite money exercise for free if you head to paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Again, that's paysetterplanning.com/moneyandmarriage. Get your access today, and I'll see you next time.